Hey friends, Michael Gum here with a quick message before we get started. The month of May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and in the coming weeks, we will be featuring a few resolutions rundowns that we hope will generate some helpful conversations about mental health. As a bit of a bonus, we'd like to treat you to a previously unreleased episode from our archives on the topic of leadership. We had this one ready to go in March of 2020, but there were obviously some more pressing subjects that came up around this time. We figure better late than never. This month, we encourage you to refresh yourself by revisiting our past episodes, and as always, to share your favorite episodes with your friends. And we hope you'll enjoy today's episode about leadership featuring guest Howie Levin.
Hey, welcome to the Resolutions Podcast, where we like to turn difficult topics into helpful conversation. I'm your host, Chris Campbell, along with our co-host, Michael Gum.
Hey, everybody.
So, Michael, today we are going to attempt to pull back the curtain and give our listeners a look at how leaders take a concept and foster it into a movement.
Talking about leadership.
Yes. You know, we're specifically looking at what are the factors that come into play when you begin a simple idea and end with a sustainable movement.
It's a little bit different, I guess, from what we would usually talk about on this podcast.
Well, right, because we're very counseling-centric. We want to create a podcast that's going to be a help for people to offer, again, you know, a catalyst for helpful conversation. But here's the thing. Whether you're working a recovery program or just really trying to find your way with a sense of significance, to steer yourself, you know, in a helpful life pathway, here's what it comes down to ultimately. Trusting God, cleaning house, helping others.
Yeah.
I've heard any sort of 12-step recovery program can be broken down even further into those three components. Trusting God, cleaning house, helping others. At some point, we need an outlet for that which is stirring within us in a positive way. So every so often, we're going to take the liberty here at Resolutions to talk about leadership.
Cool. Well, leadership is definitely a topic that's near and dear to my heart. I actually have a degree in leadership. And so I've spent some time in the classroom and reading and all that on the topic of leadership. And I tell you, one of the first things you learn, there's not just one way to do it. Everybody's got an idea of what leadership is, what it looks like. There's, you know, so many different words and jargon that go along with it. But really, I think what it's boiled down to is, you just have to have some kind of intentionality behind it. You know, you're not just flying by the seat of your pants. There's a theory that should guide you. And I think actually coming up in this episode, some of the topics that are going to come up are some of the ones that I remember most fondly from my studies in my leadership program.
Yeah, it's like a really cool thing when you take maybe what's been taught or you've been exposed to in theory and you find somebody that's mastering it.
Yeah.
And you interact with them, you watch them, you study them, you get to see, you know, what's the outcome, you know, of their efforts, you know, as they're directing it in leadership.
Yeah.
Today, we are going to introduce everyone in our audience to just such a person. Today, we have the opportunity to hear from Howard, or as I call him and his friends call him, Howie Levin. And Howie is an exceptional person when it comes to not only leadership, but cultivating leadership potential in others. Howie is the executive director at One Heart DC. This is a multifaceted collaborations of faith leaders throughout the inner and outer beltway in D.C. He's also the director at the Washington Prayer Gathering. He's a social entrepreneur at Embrace Loudoun. He's a former board of directors, member of the, and actually a founding member of the Northern Virginia Human Trafficking Initiative, which we've talked about on here before.
Yeah.
He is a former principal and leader at Synergy Consulting Services. Services Corporation. He's a former senior VP and COO at TerraCorp. He worked at a U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. He is literally a nuclear scientist, a graduate from MIT.
This is an incredible resume.
No doubt. And he's a graduate from Capital Bible Seminary.
Wow.
Yeah. So this dude has a resume that is pretty thick. Uh-huh. And the awesome thing is he just has a contagious personality, and he has a track record of just astonishing, leadership. Where again, as we said, he's able to take a concept and foster that into a movement.
Our vision, Chris, and listeners, is that every man, woman, and child in our region, which includes the District of Columbia and the 10 surrounding counties, about 5,000 square miles and 5 or 6 million people,
wow,
that every man, woman, and child would have an opportunity to experience and hear the gospel from one of us, one of our partners. But that kind of rolls right into our mission, which is to see gospel saturation in the region.
Yeah.
And by that, what we mean is that our influence, Christian influence in the region, would be so strong, it would be palpable, if you will, that everywhere you looked, you'd see some evidence of our Lord working and through us.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a lofty goal. Way back in the beginnings of One Heart DC, maybe in the summer to fall of 2014, there was a brokenness among many of the pastors, spiritual leaders of the region, that we weren't doing that. We weren't getting that job done. And that ultimately led to, our wanting to see our neighbors know Christ. We wanted to see our churches become the blessings we should be to our communities.
Yeah.
And we wanted to solve this problem of a church that was not united.
Yeah,
we weren't working together. So One Heart DC was birthed out of the idea that the only way that we're going to reach that point of saturation would be if we did it together.
Okay, so this guy is not afraid to take on big ideas.
Clearly not.
No, he will swing for the fence, every time. And here's the deal. You and I probably throughout the course of our lives to this point, we've probably been in spaces where people have verbalized really innovative thoughts and ideas. But unfortunately, they sort of fizzle out in the birthing stage. One of the greatest challenges, I believe, is getting momentum established, or to bring enough force at the onset of introducing an idea to overcome inertia, so to speak, to get things moving in a positive direction. So I asked Howie about this, and his answer was insightful.
People are naturally inclined, given that pastors have some of the hardest jobs on the planet. The ministry never ends, there isn't time. But we saw the Holy Spirit act in a very uncommon way at this point in time. That reached down in the hearts of these leaders, and they just became convicted that something needed to be done. And so that was the starting point. It was something we couldn't manufacture in human terms. God needed to move for it to get started. But then there's some practical things. You need to understand the rhythms of church, of pastors' lives, and be smart and practical about how you structure certain things. One of the things that I think was very pivotal, and we were learning, and you mentioned the Loudoun Pastors Consortium that you were part of, that gave us, actually one day, it kind of a light bulb went off. Maybe that's not such a bad strategy for saturating the region. Having clusters of leaders meet on a regular basis to do life and ministry together. And if we had a number of them spread out in the various spheres, whether it be a geographic focus or a people group focus or a need focus, then that might be it. And right now there's around 50 such clusters spread all around the DMV that we know of. I'm sure there's many, and denominations have their own structures for this. But the fact that leaders are meeting One of the important things that we learned, you know, remember for years we were looking for that one way we could bless our community, the thing we could do together. Yeah. At any point in time, each leader was in a different place. And you'd have a group that were, rah, 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 let's go do it. And a group that, well, it's not going to work for us right now. Yeah. So it was hard to get, you know, everybody resonating at the same point.
Yeah.
So what we ended up doing is we kind of said, well, you know, that's probably not going to happen that way. We just continued on. Continued in prayer, and then God started to bring those opportunities to us. In the Loudoun Pastors Consortium, I can think of at least three, there were probably more times, where, for example, someone from government would come to us. In the human trafficking area, it was Representative Frank Wolf. He came to us one day and said, you know, we've got a problem in my district. Mm-hmm. It's human trafficking. And I think the church should get involved and play a role in eradicating and mm-hmm. helping people mm-hmm. heal. That happened, and it later led to, you know, the ministry we now know as NOVA Human Trafficking Initiative. There was another one that we talked about earlier this morning, the Are You Sure campaign, where we were, government was concerned that we had young people, teens, committing suicide, exhibiting other risky behaviors, and, you know, what we, you know, could the church help with that? So a bunch of churches got together under the leadership of the consortium and designed a program that we call Are You Sure, which is helping parents understand the environment their children are in, both at school, at home, in the community, as well as maybe what their role is in some cases, not helping the situation. And so, these groups, I think, are essential. I don't think a pastor or leader, whether you're a marketplace leader, a pastor, anyone, needs to be in some sort of a covenant community where you do life together, you're in prayer, you're supporting each other, but also on mission together.
You know, Chris, when he's talking about these clusters of leaders, I've actually seen this principle in action.
Really?
Yeah, I have. So I knew a friend of mine was a pastor that I actually worked with for a long time in Denver. And he, for a while, he just decided that he wanted to regularly get together with a few of his pastor friends once a month. Over some good barbecue.
Okay.
And they would do this, you know, every month they would just talk about the challenges of their own individual ministry contexts, and they would pray together, and they were just there for one another. There wasn't really some huge goal behind it. They just wanted to meet together. And then something happened. I'm sure you'll remember the Aurora theater shooting that happened. And so there are these friends, pastors, that are meeting together, and they're seeing just this bleak situation in their city, and they're motivated to do something. And they came up with a few different ideas, but really they landed on just organizing regular worship and prayer gatherings in the city, and just getting together people from a number of different churches. You know, it's not about one church. It's about the church with a capital C.
Yeah, yeah.
One of my favorite parts about it was that they, in addition to being these times of worship and prayer where they're really interceding for the city, they would take up an offering towards the end of the evening for some ministry, in a local ministry in the city.
Wow.
They would do 80% going to that ministry, and then 20% just to keep the wheels rolling for this movement that they're starting. And so there are ministries that were, you know, fighting human trafficking, ministries that were ministering to the homeless of the city, that kind of stuff. But really it was just great to see this thing that really just was birthed out of friends meeting together. You know, my pastor friend, he was really big into unity. One of his favorite verses was out of Psalm 133, where it says how good and pleasant it is when brothers and sisters dwell together in unity. For, you know, where there's unity, the Lord commands blessing. And he wanted to see blessings poured out in the city because of this terrible thing that happened. So unity, it was a big part of that movement. And, you know, obviously it's a great goal, but it's not always easy, is it, Chris?
It's not. And as you're talking about that, like in my mind, I'm imagining, okay, when that crisis hit, because there was all this relational investment there was a true sense of collaboration on that.
Yeah.
Everybody sort of stepped in. And one of the things that I find, when it comes to movements, let's say, mm-hmm. And that's different than creating an organization and so forth. But if you're not careful, movements are really tied directly to a personality.
Yeah. If it lives particularly by a certain leader, then it's going to die by that certain leader too.
Yeah. And so that's the amazing thing about Howie is he carries himself with such humility. He's so, I say this in a complimentary way. He's so understated, his interactions, he has plenty of experience, dealing with these very types of challenges on uniting people together. So I ask him if he could share his secret sauce, mm-hmm. so to speak, on unity.
Well, first of all, it will not happen naturally most of the time because of all the factors that come into play.
Okay.
If you're in the church world, it's getting from Sunday to Sunday.
This is back to what we were talking about.
Yeah, okay, or it's dealing with the couple that's knocking on your door, that then their marriage is blowing up and stuff like that. So there's just not enough perceived time and capacity for this level, a new level of unity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Many people look at unity as what's happening within a certain congregation, as opposed to unity that's in some of the surrounding community and even farther, a whole region, a 5,000 square mile region like the DMV. So because of that, it's a God-sized problem, regards God in it. Our movement started, I didn't mention this earlier, but it started in prayer.
Yeah.
It was first a prayer movement. It's evolving and including some other things. So I believe that we have to be praying that this will occur, number one.
Yes.
Number two, I think it does take a compelling vision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Most of us, certainly church leaders, got into the ministry because we wanted to see people know Jesus and follow him, and we wanted to see lives transformed physically and for eternity.
Yes.
But oftentimes there's numerous barriers to that happening. Mm-hmm. So we have to address them. Some of the key barriers oftentimes in the church are in the theological realm, and I'll get to others, but in the theological realm, what we have done is simplify it. We chose not to get hung up about some of the traditional barriers. And you might say the denominational barriers and things like that. We're a movement that is diverse denominationally, racially, ethnically, and even generationally.
Mm-hmm.
So we're focusing on the main things. We really say, you're going to be interested in One Heart DC if you agree with these three things. And we're going to give grace on others. Who Jesus is, is humanity and deity, the authority and inerrancy of the word, and basically Ephesians 2:8-9, how we are saved. We're not going to quibble, even though they're important. I don't want to minimize the impact of certain tenets of certain denominations. They are important, and we need to honor them and all that, but they're not important to gospel saturation.
Gotcha.
So we don't get all... So if you look in the tent of the 700-some... churches and organizations in it, it's very diverse. Mm. And so the way that has been enabled is to look at the factors that have prevented that in the past, and one of them is denominational.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing are some really practical things. There's certain rhythms of life, and it'll vary in different areas, but in the DMV, we have to worry about time of day in scheduling a meeting.
Yes.
Traffic.
Yeah.
Getting people to cross over the Potomac. You know, some think you need a passport of some sort. There are certain things that you have to do if you want to gather people. And you have to be very careful as to the nature, the frequency, and things like that for certain types of gatherings. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we emphasize, ministry is local. We love where we live. So that's why these kind of more local entities. And then occasionally we'll bring the entire region together on something like a Washington prayer gathering. We'll go to mm-hmm. the mall.
Right.
We'll see the church as it really is in its full diversity and its full beauty. Okay. All in one place. For the saints to experience that, but also for the community to see that, wow, there's something that they have that maybe I would love to have, and, you know, stimulate some curiosity.
That's really
about
good. That's really
Jesus.
Good. It's not a protest.
Yeah, it's not a protest. It's just, man, here's people that love each other.
Yeah.
They're committed to something. I may not understand it.
Yeah.
But there's an attractiveness to that. Something
yeah.
we want to understand. What causes that? And they see us doing things, maybe accomplishing things that they don't see happening generally in the culture. So it's, you know, what we want people to see is that through Christ, there's a level of unity on a human level, even, that you can't even approach, you know, in other spheres of life on this planet.
So as I'm hearing Howie talk about that, I can really hear the wisdom coming through that just comes from years of experience leading people. You know, we heard that that extensive resume at the front end of this podcast.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, Michael, that comes from leadership on a variety of platforms that are inside and outside, you know, the faith community. I know when you and I get together, you know, our conversations tend to default into those spaces of leadership that is, you know, faith community and things, because that's where, mm-hmm. you know, we've both had a great deal of hands-on experience with that. But Howie is just so incredibly adaptable in all of these platforms. You know, as I was talking with Howie further on in our interview, I had him go a little deeper on the topic specifically of leadership, cultivating leadership. And I mentioned to him that I once heard a definition from Pastor Rick Warren, where he basically said that leadership in its most simple definition is influence. And I asked Howie what he thought about that definition and ended up asking him for his definition of what is the essence of leadership, according to Howie Levin.
The best thing that I can say is to look at our Lord Jesus Christ and what were some of his characteristics and to discern. There was for your listeners, there was a book written a number of years ago by Jim Collins called Good to Great.
Okay.
And it's really interesting. He characterized what was, he termed a level five leader.
Okay.
Level five being the ultimate leader.
Okay.
And there were two characteristics that, and I think we see them in Jesus, that distinguish it. First was this fierce determination, passion, will to see something happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But coupled to that, an uncommon humility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think that, and maybe this is what people see in me from time to time, is we like to follow people, and therefore the influence thing comes into play,
yeah.
who have a passion.
Mm-hmm.
I think even some of those that are not yet following Jesus Christ, you know, they if they see that in us, that, you know, we are committed to, our faith is driven through this person, Jesus Christ, and
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and whether they understand it, buy it or not, they said, that's real. That's authentic, real, mm-hmm. authentic passion for anything, not just faith.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
something that draws us. We want to understand that. What's going on there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think that gets to influence. Now, influence ultimately has to convert to trust.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can influence something in any number of ways, some of them not even healthy ways.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We can see that when you pick up the newspaper, listen to the news. There's a lot of people with influence. It's not necessarily for the common good of our
this
communities, our nation, whatever, but
true.
It's influence of sorts. So
yeah,
it's
yeah.
What we're talking about is the right kind of influence, biblical influence, which is influence that is ultimately restoring individuals and the communities to the way Jesus and God originally intended.
Hmm.
This influence has to come from the ultimate influence, and we're all leaders under others,
hmm.
accountable to others.
Mm-hmm.
Our head, if you will, is Jesus Christ, and he said, follow me, emulate me, and things like that. But he also said, if you want to be my disciple, you know, deny yourselves. There's going to be some sacrifice involved, and take up your cross,
mm-hmm.
and follow me.
Mm-hmm.
So following me
mm-hmm.
is going to be hard. We see that in Matthew 16:24. But he says, this is the good news, that at the end of times, when there's going to be a renewal of the heaven and earth coming together and all that, those who did follow, okay, they're going to be rewarded. They're going to see, they're never going to walk in darkness. They're going to have the light of life. So, be careful who we're following. Understand that there are some prices to pay, but ultimately, if you're following Jesus Christ, it's going to be well worth it in the end.
So Howie mentioned Jim Collins, and that's actually one of the things that I fondly remember from my years studying leadership. Jim Collins has this idea called the window and the mirror that really stuck with me. When talking about these quote unquote level five leaders, these top echelon leaders, something that he noticed was there was a tendency that they had where they would look inward for the faults of a company, but they would look outward for its successes.
Wow.
So, the window being looking outwards and giving credit where credit is due for all of the good things that happen, and then looking inward, looking in the mirror to see what can be refined anytime the company hits any sort of hardship. Uh-huh. And it's very opposite to our natural tendencies, mm-hmm. but there's a humility behind it. And really, I think what you could call it is servant leadership.
I think you're right about that. And interestingly enough, Howie and I went a little further, and he talks about servant leadership.
Well, I think that, that the idea of servant leadership and what we saw Jesus do, and we see it documented in Scripture in John 13, where he washes the feet of the disciples.
Yeah.
That, as a leader, we are trying to see others reach everything that God intended for them to be, mm-hmm. and to support them in that process, and that image of just, the Lord of the universe, washing the feet of his disciples is just so powerful. And also Paul says in Philippians 2:3, do nothing out of selfish ambition, rather in humility value others above oneself. Mm-hmm. That is not a bad guidance for all of us. And whether it be someone, I'm sure you see this in your counseling ministry, of people coming in with all kinds of problems, as you mentioned earlier, and just to see that, there might be a backstory to that.
Yeah.
What have they been through? What has happened to them that was totally out of their control? What have they maybe brought on themselves?
Yes.
All these different factors come into play. But to, take that into account, offer some grace, and to listen no matter what those circumstances are. And then to turn it around and say, there's an answer. Mm. You don't have to stay there. There's a way forward. Jesus can handle it.
Yes.
I'm sure you say that all, but in an appropriate way, of course.
Yeah.
But I think that, getting back to your question, what I like about Jesus' approach and how you can take a ragtag group like that, he focused in his strategy, if you will. Yes, he had 12, 13, but 12, okay. So there was power in that kind of learning community, if you will. Yeah, and I saw him doing maybe three different kinds of things with the group. He clearly taught them some stuff.
Yeah.
He brought in the word into the environment and all that. He was coaching them, helping them to connect some dots. Most of the time it was, by asking questions and helping them to kind of piece things together. And then certainly they had the best laboratory in the world. They were going all over the place, seeing ministry, right in front of their eyes. So those three components of learning, coaching, and experiencing, some experiential learning, were very powerful. And he not only did it with the 12, there was a group of three that he focused on a little bit more closely.
That's right, that's right.
So there was kind of levels, if you think of it, there was the three, the 12, and then sometimes we saw him teaching many,
mm-hmm.
And I think we all find ourselves in different environments. They all contribute, but wow. You know, I think in my own life, I have a tendency to want to find the most leverage in anything. You know, yeah. How can we have the more impact? So we immediately go to the bigger numbers, thing, the bigger initiative or strategy. And, you know, Jesus is, whether it be one-on-one, one-on-three, or one-on-12, certainly showed how that can multiply.
Yes.
And quite frankly, that's our problem in the church right now. In the end, we wouldn't need One Heart DC and a lot of other parachurch ministries, if you will, if we were all radical disciples following Jesus as we know we should.
Yes.
People would be supernaturally compelled to be living a life of mission and things like that. So our real problem, and the one that we're still trying to get a handle on, is this whole issue of discipleship and how, you know, that ultimately is leading to transformation. Well, Jesus did that. Mm-hmm. I mean, what was he doing? He was working with people called discipleship, doing calling disciples, doing discipleship. And we've got to get better at that.
Yeah.
We really do. And we haven't found, I remember, you may probably remember when we were in the consortium, it was a period of time where every national conference had that as a theme for a year. And we spent a few months talking about discipleship in our churches. And we didn't come up with anything new, faster, design. We came back to just the way Jesus was doing it.
Yeah.
And there's no real speeding it up. But it's interesting to know, as you pointed out, it had incredible multiplication effect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so we may not see it immediately.
Yes.
But if you look over a period of time and you look at the growth of the church and you look at just what was going on in Acts, even within just a few years,
yes,
just the explosion
that
can occur from 12.
You know, I think one of the reasons that the church can have a hard time discipling people is that we have a tendency to want to systemize everything that we do, you know, especially in the Western world. You know, we have this idea that if we just make a better program, if we just find that right strategy, that right framework, if we plug everything into the right formula, then we're going to see growth. But, you know, that's not what you see in Jesus. You see Jesus empowering his disciples in a way that, you know, it takes time and really it takes creativity. Now, creativity, I mean, I'm sitting here, I'm a musician, and obviously creativity is one of those things that resonates with me, and it may not resonate with some of our listeners, but I've come to learn that really creativity is so much more than art.
Yeah.
There's creativity in everything.
Yeah.
And really, I know this because I'm a dad.
Okay.
You're a dad too. Yeah. How many times have you had to get creative in getting your daughter to take a nap?
That's what my wife is for.
No. I hear you.
Or, you know, if one of them has a bad dream and you're just trying to get through to them and what you're saying isn't working, you've got to exhaust your creative efforts in really finding a way that's going to make an impact. And anybody that's ever been in that same situation and you've come out on the other side having made some kind of positive difference, you're creative.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's less about what side of your brain tends to function and more, do you give yourself the freedom to just explore new ideas for solutions?
Yeah. And really that's God-given because, you know, God is our creator and he instilled it. I mean, we're created in the image of God. So he's given us the ability to create, whether it's a poem or being able to, you know, do what Howie does and create and sustain these organizations.
Right.
You know, that it's all about finding those things that really tailor to our unique gifting, our unique personalities.
Yeah. And that's so important what you're saying. Going back to what you mentioned about just finding the right program, tapping into the right resources, that is seems like a path of least resistance. It's not very efficient to go the other way that you're talking about. But when you take the time to know people, you know, you take the time to know not only what are we trying to achieve, what are the things that are potentially standing in the way of that, but how do we work together in a way that's harmonious. You know, leadership, regardless of if you're talking about in a church or on a campus or in a, you know, in a business office or in a family, good leadership principles is really a turnkey proposition. You know, if you understand what it is, you know, to help people come around a common goal and to begin to not only pull together in unity, but to pull together in the same direction, that is powerful.
Mm-hmm. It's like composing powerful. A symphony, but yeah. It's people. It's not music.
Yeah. Amazing. Right. And, you know, again, so there are pastors that we know of that listen to this podcast. Mm-hmm. Great. You know, there are people, you know, in the business world, you yeah. know, that listen to this podcast, but you know what? There are moms and dads, you yeah. know, who, you know, their chief, you know, realm of influence is right within the four walls of their home. You mm-hmm. know, there are teachers, you know, that listen to this podcast. Yeah. There are coaches. We can go on and on. And so, you know, having an understanding and appreciation, you know, for the people that you're really trying to engage with and have influence over is so important. And one of the things that we think about, of course, as Christians, as Christ followers, is the idea that, you know, when we come into a relationship with God through Jesus Christ, you know, there's a spiritual life that's infused within us that not only makes us come alive spiritually, but the Bible teaches that God sort of rewires us in a supernatural way
yeah.
to where we have this certain gifting that begins to work itself out. And how he talks about that.
Yeah, too often, because of just the challenge of doing church, if you will, we try to do exactly as you said, mm-hmm. you know, fit people into church programs. What I want to see people fit into is God's design for them. Mm. God's design for reaching other people, impacting communities, and things like that. So it's more of a needs, it's an inverted pyramid, if you will. It's needs driven. You know, this is what this person needs, this is what the community needs. And too often, particularly in, you know, when you think about, we disciple people, we teach people kind of in mass. There are different types of people in our congregation. Let's take marketplace people, for example.
Okay.
Every day of their lives, they are solving big problems. Mm-hmm. But we're sometimes asking them, and maybe they should sometimes, but to fit into this church program, where maybe we ought to be asking them, okay, what's the most pressing need in the community? How can you bring everything God made you to be and everything, all your company's capacities to that problem? And then, you know, all blessings, honor, and glory for solving it go to Jesus, of course, but we need to ask people to do stuff that I think is, closer to what God would want them to be doing, but also closer to their real capacities. Stuff that is externally focused, not just internally yeah, focused, yeah. things like that.
So you can tell by this interview, Michael, I mean, we could have gone on for hours, mm-hmm. and we did. We went on much longer. You know, yeah. it was so good for me to be able to sit down with Howie again. And you feel like you're sitting, you're sitting down in the presence of this sage, you know, that can really, really impart, you know, this amazing amount of wisdom as far as, you know, leadership and influence with yeah. you. So as we were going, you know, over our show notes, I don't know how this popped up, but there was a reference to an obscure scripture in the Old Testament that I thought, oh, I should look that up because I'm not familiar with it. It's found in the book of Numbers. That's a book that people commonly pass over, mm-hmm. you know, and they don't spend a lot of time in. But there's this verse in Numbers chapter 10, verse 11, and I'm going to read it and explain it to you, right? Mm-hmm. It says, so in the second year, in the second month, on the 20th day of the month, the cloud lifted from over the tabernacle of the testimony, and the people of Israel set out in organized stages. Now, if you know the Bible, you know that that the Exodus has happened, you know, from Egypt, and the people under the leadership of Moses have, you know, gathered themselves in the wilderness area, and they camped there for some time, you know, as they got organized, as they began to listen to God's instructions for, you know, building the tabernacle and all these certain things. And anyway, it was sort of interesting that God's presence was known among them because at night there was this pillar of fire that lit up the sky above them. And in the day, there was a cloud that mm-hmm. shielded them from, you know, the sun, from UV rays and so yeah. forth. And this is the point where that cloud begins to move. And they would follow that cloud toward the promised land. And the mm-hmm. amazing thing is, you know, that verse, as it pops up in our show notes here, is when leaders, you know, invest in people and they are taking the time to know them, to encourage them, to equip them, and then they empower them, they are setting the stage that when God moves, people will, in a very, you know, non-awkward, unclumsy way, come together and they'll be able to roll. You know, with whatever God has before them. So, you know, this is sort of what unfolded and is unfolding with One Heart DC, you know, under a lot of, you know, Howie's leadership. He talked about there are 725 churches, organizations currently affiliated with One Heart DC. Mm-hmm. The range of their involvement is unbelievable, the different layers of ministry and helping and inside, you know, the Beltway, different, you know, if you've ever been inside the Beltway around D.C., you know, there's a river that separates the haves from the have-nots. And One Heart D.C. is as active, and they have people as active on both sides of that river. It's amazing to that. You know, they are striving for people to practice a tithe. You know, mm-hmm. their leaders, they expect them to at least set aside 10% of their effort, their time, their human resources, monetary resources, and they're shooting for a tipping point that is tied to a tithe or a tenth. What they want is 10% of the population who really take the call of the gospel following Jesus very seriously. Mm-hmm. And they estimate that if they can get to 10% of the population stepping into places of influence and position, that will amount to 500,000 people mobilized to make a difference.
Wow.
Just inside DC metro area. So mm-hmm. isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's numbers that, I mean, my brain can hardly think of it. I mean, that's more people that live in our entire state, I think.
Yeah, you know, and it transcends socioeconomic boundaries. There's so much even just racial reconciliatory things that are happening with this organization. It's wonderfully supernatural, refreshing, and it just starts from a guy that's got an idea, you know, and he has lived long enough and has learned enough to know, okay, here are the biblical principles of leadership to enact. If you want to see, you know, an idea grow into a sustainable movement. Mm-hmm. So that's a good place to wrap up. You have any parting thoughts here for us, Michael?
No, I think really it just goes to show that you have value. You have a unique platform that God has given you, a unique contribution that you can make into the kingdom. And if it doesn't look like the other people that you've seen, that just means that your calling is even more that much more unique. I just hope that people will be empowered by what they've heard in this podcast today.
Yeah, no doubt. We're going to have on the show notes page through the Resolutions Counseling of WV website, we'll have some resources there for people to tap into as far as leadership development, especially leadership development that is founded on an identity that's not built on your ability to perform or be popular or to have power or leverage, but your identity in Christ. And then we'll also have, you know, some good connections there for One Heart DC and Howie as well.
Cool.
All right. So for now, we're gonna push pause on leadership. I guarantee you we'll be picking up this subject matter again. And until the next time, I'm Chris Campbell.
I'm Michael Gumm.
And we hope to meet you right back here at the next podcast.